From Springfield, this is live coverage of a speech by U.S. Senator Barack Obama of Illinois, a speech in which he's expected to make it formal and official that he is running for President of the United States, seeking first, of course, the Democratic nomination for the office. I'm Rich Bradley, along with Sean Crawford, who is in downtown Springfield this morning, to report on what has become a very, very festival-like atmosphere here, despite the fact that temperatures in the capital city this morning have been hovering in the upper single digits and approaching the low teens. Spectators for this event have been streaming into the grounds of the old state capitol historic site since 9 o'clock this morning to watch Illinois' junior senator make his announcement about a presidential run. To Sean Crawford now at the site. And Sean, a bit about the weather. How's everybody holding up?
Everybody's holding up pretty well, Rich. It is a cold morning, but a very enthusiastic crowd. An estimated 5,000 people are expected to be here today to cheer on Barack Obama, supporters of his, and many people just coming out to kind of look on to this event, which has a bit of history involved with it, as well as being a political event here on the grounds of the old state capitol, where Abraham Lincoln actually served as a state lawmaker. Barack Obama will give a speech. We have been given a copy of it. It's about five typewritten pages. He's going to talk about bringing people together and changing politics. Not a lot of details in it, but he does bring up some things he wants to deal with, and that includes bringing troops home very early on in the next presidency. Dick Durbin, the U.S. Senator, senior senator from Illinois, is now taking the podium. He will be introducing Barack Obama.
We want to acknowledge the many elected officials who are here. Governor Rod Blagojevich, the state elected officials, our Illinois congressional delegation, members of the Illinois General Assembly, the House and the Senate, and all elected officials who are here. We gather this morning in a place filled with memory. Here, many years ago, another son of Illinois began a journey to Washington. Many questioned whether he could meet the challenge of his time. We stand in the shadow of the old state capitol, where he accepted that challenge and went on to heal a divided nation. Today, another son of Illinois will take his first step on his journey to Washington. In his time, he has touched the hearts, quickened the spirit, and inspired the nation, a nation hungering for a new generation of leadership. Across this nation, they know him as the man who gave a speech in Boston with such passion in his heart that it brought America to its feet. They know him as the man who speaks to a divided nation about the better angels of our nature. And they know him as the man whose life reminds us that in America, everything is possible. And we know him. We know him as our friend, our colleague, our brother. As he starts from Springfield down this long, uncertain road, we want him to remember one thing. We will be by his side every step of the way. Join me at this moment in history and welcome Barack Obama.
Barack Obama about to take the podium and address the crowd here in downtown Springfield this morning. Obama will be announcing he is officially running for the Democratic nomination for president. Barack Obama, just a couple of years ago, was running for the U.S. Senate, and in 2004 at this time, before the primary election, was considered a bit of an unknown and certainly an underdog in that race. Things have changed quite a bit for him, And now he is not only a national political figure, but one of the leading Democrats in the United States.
And Obama's working the crowd, Sean, as he makes his way to the speaker's platform, shaking hands.
You're right, Rich. And one of the things, of course, from where we're standing at, it's a little tough to see exactly where he is at, but he is on his way to the podium. This will take him a couple of moments. People have been lining up here since very early this morning to get in line and get a very close seat close to the podium, where there are many of them are standing, but the crowd actually stretches well over a block long. People that are coming out today to witness this event here in Springfield, Barack Obama's announcement that he's running for president. Signs that show Obama 08 being waved throughout the crowd, blue signs with white and red writing on them. And as cold of a day as it is, it's actually a clear day here in Springfield, so things could be a bit worse. We could be dealing with some rain or snow, but overall it's a sunny day, just very cold. The crowd, though, not letting that get their enthusiasm down. Here he is waving to the crowd as he approaches the podium. Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle. Probably the most important speech Barack Obama has given since that 2004 Democratic National Convention address, the keynote address, which really propelled him to the national level that he's on now. Again, he will be talking today about items such as bringing troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. He'll also be talking about health care for everyone, universal health care, some of the many themes he will touch on. And, of course, Abraham Lincoln will be a theme in this speech as well. Here's Barack Obama.
Oh, what? Look at all of you. Look at all of you. Goodness. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh, giving all praise and honor to God for bringing us together here today. Thank you so much. I am so grateful to see all of you. You guys are still 10 back there. Let me begin by saying thanks to all of you who've traveled from far and wide to brave the cold today. I know it's a little chilly. But I'm fired up. You know, we all made this journey for a reason. It's humbling to see a crowd like this. But in my heart, I know you didn't just come here for me. You know. You came here because you believe in what this country can be. In the face of war, you believe there can be peace. In the face of despair, you believe there can be hope. In the face of a politics that shut you out, that's told you to settle, that's divided us for too long, you believe that we can be one people. Reaching out for what's possible, building that more perfect union. That's the journey we're on today. But let me tell you how I came to be here. As most of you know, I'm not a native of this great state. I moved to Illinois over two decades ago. I was a young man then, just a year out of college. I knew no one in Chicago when I arrived, was without money or family connections. But a group of churches had offered me a job as a community organizer for the grand sum of $13,000 a year. And I accepted the job sight unseen, motivated then by a single, simple, powerful idea that I might play a small part in building a better America. My work took me to some of Chicago's poorest neighborhoods. I joined with pastors and lay people to deal with communities that had been ravaged by plant closings. I saw that the problems people faced weren't simply local in nature, that the decisions to close a steel mill was made by distant executives, that the lack of textbooks and computers in a school could be traced to skewed priorities of politicians 1,000 miles away, and that when a child turns to violence, I came to realize that there's a hole in that boy's heart that no government alone can fill. It was in these neighborhoods that I received the best education that I ever had, and where I learned the meaning of my Christian faith. After 3 years of this work, I went to law school because I wanted to understand how the law should work for those in need. I became a civil rights lawyer and taught constitutional law. And after a time, I came to understand that our cherished rights of liberty and equality depend on the active participation of an awakened electorate. It was with these ideas in mind that I arrived in this capital city as a state senator. It was here in Springfield where I saw all that is America converge: farmers and teachers, businessmen and laborers, all of them with a story to tell, all of them seeking a seat at the table, all of them clamoring to be heard. I made lasting friendships here, friends that I see in the audience here today. It was here where we learned to disagree without being disagreeable, that it's possible to compromise so long as you know those principles that can never be compromised, and that so long as we're willing to listen to each other, we can assume the best in people instead of the worst. It's why we were able to reform a death penalty system that was broken. That's why we were able to give health insurance to children in need. That's why we made the tax system right here in Springfield more fair and just for working families. And that's why we passed ethics reform that the cynics said could never, ever be passed. It was here in Springfield where North, South, East, and West come together that I was reminded of the essential decency of the American people, where I came to believe that through this decency, we can build a more hopeful America. And that is why, in the shadow of the old state capitol, where Lincoln once called on a house divided to stand together, where common hopes and common dreams still live, I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America. Now listen, Thank you. Look, I recognize that there is a certain presumptuousness in this, a certain audacity to this announcement. I know that I haven't spent a lot of time learning the ways of Washington, but I've been there long enough to know that the ways of Washington must change. The genius of our founders is that they designed a system of government that can be changed. And we should take heart because we've changed this country before. In the face of tyranny, a band of patriots brought an empire to its knees. In the face of secession, we unified a nation and set the captives free. In the face of depression, we put people back to work and lifted millions out of poverty. We welcomed immigrants to our shores. We opened railroads to the West. We landed a man on the moon, and we heard a king's call to let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. We've done this before. Each and every time a new generation has risen up and done what's needed to be done. Today, we are called once more. And it is time for our generation to answer that call. For that is our unyielding faith, that it, in the face of impossible odds, people who love their country can change it. That's what Abraham Lincoln understood. He had his doubts. He had his defeats. He had his skeptics. He had his setbacks. But through his will and his words, he moved a nation and helped free a people. It's because of the millions who rallied to his cause that we're no longer divided, north and south, slave and free. It's because men and women of every race, from every walk of life, continued to march for freedom long after Lincoln was laid to rest, that today we have the chance to face the challenges of this millennium together, as one people, as Americans. All of us know what those challenges are today: a war with no end, a dependence on oil that threatens our future, schools where too many children aren't learning, and families struggling paycheck to paycheck despite working as hard as they can. We know the challenges. We've heard them. We've talked about them for years. What stopped us from meeting these challenges is not the absence of sound policies and sensible plans. What stopped us is the failure of leadership, the smallness of our politics, the ease with which we're distracted by the petty and trivial, our chronic avoidance of tough decisions, our preference for scoring cheap political points instead of rolling up our sleeves and building a working consensus to tackle the big problems of America. For the past 6 years, we've been told that our mounting debts don't matter. We've been told that the anxiety Americans feel about rising health care costs and stagnant wages are an illusion. We've been told that climate change is a hoax. We've been told that tough talk and an ill-conceived war can replace diplomacy and strategy and foresight. And when all else fails, when Katrina happens, or the death toll in Iraq mounts, we've been told that our crises are somebody else's fault. We're distracted from our real failures and told to blame the other party, or gay people, or immigrants. And as people have looked away in disillusionment and frustration, we know what's filled the void. The cynics, the lobbyists, the special interests who've turned our government into a game only they can afford to play. They write the checks and you get stuck with the bill. They get the access while you get to write a letter. They think they own this government, but we're here today to take it back. The time for that kind of politics is over. It is through. It's time to turn the page. Right here and right now. Now look. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Look, look. We have made some progress already. I was proud to help lead the fight in Congress that led to the most sweeping ethics reforms since Watergate. But Washington has a long way to go, and it won't be easy. That's why we'll have to set priorities. We'll have to make hard choices. And although government will play a crucial role in bringing about the changes that we need, more money and programs alone will not get us to where we need to go. Each of us, in our own lives, we'll have to accept responsibility for instilling an ethic of achievement in our children, for adapting to a more competitive economy, for strengthening our communities and sharing some measure of sacrifice. So let us begin. Let us begin this hard work together. Let us transform this nation. Let us be the generation that reshapes our economy to compete in the digital age. Let's set high standards for our schools and give them the resources they need to succeed. Let's recruit a new army of teachers and give them better pay and more support in exchange for more accountability. Let's make college more affordable. And let's invest in scientific research. And let's lay down broadband lines through the heart of inner cities and rural towns all across America. We can do that. And as our economy changes, let's be the generation that ensures our nation's workers are sharing in our prosperity. Let's protect the hard-earned benefits their companies have promised. Let's make it possible for hardworking Americans to save for retirement. Let's allow our unions and their organizers to lift up this country's middle class again. We can do that. Let's be the generation that ends poverty in America. Every single person willing to work should be able to get job training that leads to a job and earn a living wage that can pay the bills and afford childcare so their kids can have a safe place to go when they work. We can do this. And let's be the generation that finally, after all these years, tackles our healthcare crisis. We can control costs by focusing on prevention, by providing better treatment to the chronically ill, and using technology to cut the bureaucracy. Let's be the generation that says, right here, right now, we will have universal healthcare in America by the end of the next president's first term. We can do that. Let's be the generation that finally frees America from the tyranny of oil. We can harness homegrown alternative fuels like ethanol and spur the production of more fuel-efficient cars. We can set up a system for capping greenhouse gases. We can turn this crisis of global warming into a moment of opportunity for innovation and job creation and an incentive for businesses that will serve as a model for the world. Let's be the generation that makes future generations proud of what we did here. Most of all, let's be the generation that never forgets what happened on that September day and confront the terrorists with everything we've got. Politics doesn't have to divide us on this anymore. We can work together to keep our country safe. I've worked with Republican Senator Dick Lugar to pass a law that will secure and destroy some of the world's deadliest weapons. We can work together to track down terrorists with a stronger military. We can tighten the net around their finances. We can improve our intelligence capabilities and finally get Homeland Security right. But let's also understand that ultimate victory against our enemies will only come by rebuilding our alliances and exporting those ideals that bring hope and opportunity to millions of people around the globe. We can do those things, but all of this cannot come to pass until we bring an end to this war in Iraq. Most of you know that I opposed this war from the start. I thought it was a tragic mistake. Today we grieve for the families who have lost loved ones, the hearts that have been broken, and the young lives that could have been. America, it is time to start bringing our troops home. It's time to admit that no amount of American lives can resolve the political disagreement that lies at the heart of someone else's civil war. That's why I have a plan that will bring our combat troops home by March of 2008. Letting the Iraqis know that we will not be there forever is our last best hope to pressure the Sunni and Shia to come to the table and find peace. And there's one other thing that it's not too late to get right about this war, and that is the homecoming of the men and women, our veterans, who have sacrificed the most. Let us honor their courage by providing the care they need and rebuilding the military they love. Let us be the generation that begins that work. I know there are those who don't believe we can do all these things. I understand the skepticism. After all, every 4 years, candidates from both parties make similar promises. I expect this year will be no different. All of us running for president will travel around the country offering 10-point plans and making grand speeches. All of us will trumpet those qualities we believe make us uniquely qualified to lead this country. But too many times, after the election is over and the confetti is swept away, all those promises fade from memory, and the lobbyists and special interests move in, and people turn away, disappointed as before, left to struggle on their own. That's why this campaign can't only be about me. It must be about us. It must be about what we can do together. This campaign must be the occasion, the vehicle of your hopes and your dreams. It will take your time, your energy, and your advice to push us forward when we're doing right and let us know when we're not. This campaign has to be about reclaiming the meaning of citizenship, restoring our sense of common purpose, and realizing that few obstacles can withstand the power of millions of voices calling for change. By ourselves, this change will not happen. Divided, we are bound to fail. But the life of a tall, gangly, self-made Springfield lawyer tells us that a different future is possible. He tells us that there is power in words. He tells us that there's power in conviction, that beneath all the differences of race and region, faith and station, we are one people. He tells us that there is power in hope. As Lincoln organized the forces arrayed against slavery, he was heard to say this: of strange, discordant, and even hostile elements, we gathered from the four winds and formed and fought to battle through. That is our purpose here today. That is why I'm in this race, not just to hold an office, but to gather with you to transform a nation. I want to win that next battle for justice and opportunity. I want to win that next battle for better schools and better jobs and better health care for all. I want us to take up the unfinished business of perfecting our union and building a better America. And if you will join with me in this improbable quest, if you feel destiny calling and see as I see the future of endless possibilities stretching out before us, if you sense as I sense that the time is now to shake off our slumber and slough off our fears and make good on the debt we owe past and future generations, then I am ready to take up the cause and march with you and work with you. Today, together, we can finish the work that needs to be done and usher in a new birth of freedom on this earth. Thank you very much, everybody. Let's get to work. I love you. Thank you.
Barack Obama giving a speech in downtown Springfield announcing he will seek the Democratic nomination for president. Obama still waving to some well-wishers nearby the podium. We've been told a crowd estimate down here this morning between 15 and 17,000 people, and that is coming from the Springfield Police Department. Barack Obama now hugging his wife Michelle, continues to wave to the crowd. This is really the launch of his campaign. Some would say he's already been on it for a little while, but he will go from here to Iowa, also wrapping up the weekend in Chicago with another announcement tomorrow night for people there. But Barack Obama officially in the race for the U.S. presidency.
In his speech, Sean, Senator Obama invoked some of Abraham Lincoln's ability to unite a nation and promised to lead a new generation as the country's first black president. And it does not escape us, nor anyone, I think, of the symbolism of making this speech here in Springfield in front of the old state capitol historic site.
You're right, Rich, and this is a situation where when Abraham Lincoln served as a state lawmaker in this building, he served as at a time in which the nation was pretty much torn apart over the issue of slavery. To invoke Lincoln to do this speech here in front of this building, the old state capitol in downtown Springfield, certainly, showing once again that trying to show that this nation can come together and that especially issues such as race, are not ones that will decide the presidency. Now, there are many out there, though, who still wonder whether or not the country is ready for a black president, or in that case, a female president. And this year, I guess in the next year, we will find that out. Certainly, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton consider the two front runners right now in the Democratic primary.
You made note, Sean, of the fact there were upwards of 17,000 people crowded around this historic square in downtown Springfield, maybe half that many in terms of the media here to cover Senator Obama's launch.
I was told, Rich, that by one of the organizers of this event that there was more media covering this event than the Democratic National Convention in Boston, of course, where Obama made that famous keynote address. But there were more media here. There are media from all over the world. In fact, a German television crew was working right behind us. There have been media from Japan, from Europe, all over the place, and then as well as Africa. Barack Obama's father comes from Kenya, and so certainly African nations are coming here to also watch this event and consider this a historic event as well. It is an interesting point that Barack Obama decided to come to Springfield, though, as you mentioned. It is a place where he sort of began, sort of cut his teeth as a politician, as a state lawmaker. Many people have been talking over the past few days, people that aren't as familiar with his time spent in the legislature, as to how that prepared him. How were people expecting him to rise to this level of prominency back when he was just a state lawmaker? And I think most people would answer no. I mean, you couldn't have foreseen that. He served in the minority party during much of that time, so his ability to usher through legislation was really not available to him, but he was always someone who could work with people, always someone who would listen to the opposing viewpoints of others, and I think that that always brought him respect from not only Democrats but from Republicans as well, including many that I believe are closely watching this race as well.
Sean, I believe that you're in a position, you personally are in a position to give us a little insight into how the international media is keying upon Senator Obama's candidacy now for president. You covered Senator Obama during his 7 or 8 years as a state senator in the upper chamber in the Illinois General Assembly. And in recent days, you've been on programs on the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and programs on the BBC. And put you in a position, I think, to make some judgments based upon the kind of questions you were asked.
I think people view him, people especially from outside of the United States, first of all, but certainly even outside of Illinois, view him as somebody totally different when it comes to American politics. And he is somewhat refreshing, I think, when you meet him. Now, whether or not, you know, he is the best choice for president, that's up to many, many voters to make that decision next year. But when you talk to reporters, they see something different there in him. And especially those that don't know him, this is a relative new occurrence for them to see American politics and see somebody on the scene that not only is a black American, but somebody as, a very, very bright fellow who's coming up with a lot of different ideas. Now, we did hear a few of those today during his speech. Not a lot of detail included in those, but, you know, things about bringing home troops and how he would do that, health care, expanding health care in this country. We hear that from a lot of politicians, but for some reason, Barack Obama, when he says it, a lot more people seem to believe him. And it certainly has not hurt his campaign and his popularity at all. This is a fellow that I think is gaining more popularity nationwide and across the world, and will make it a very interesting race as we move forward. Illinois has not had somebody that really had a legitimate shot to be a national player in politics like that. It's been a long time since that's happened.
I see Senator Obama still working the crowd. Doesn't appear to be in really too big a hurry to get out of town, despite the fact that from here he travels to Iowa and then back to Chicago tonight for, I think there's a rally tomorrow in the Chicago area that he will keynote. And then for Senator Obama, it's on to New Hampshire on Monday.
That's right, and of course the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary are going to be the first real tests. Of course, they are for any candidate going forward next year. It's almost still a year away before those occur, and when you look at it, it's an amazing to get into a race like this. It has to take a lot of thought, has to take a lot of decision making, and whether or not you really want to do it, because it is a tiring process. He and his wife, I know, have discussed this with their family and apparently have decided it is the right time to do this, but it is going to be a very busy year for him. There's a lot of questions as to whether or not other states, including Illinois, will move their primaries up, and certainly Illinois could help Barack Obama by moving a primary up to early February of next year. That's in discussion stages at this point. I think that's a very likely possibility it will happen, and that could take a little bit of the luster away from the Iowa and New Hampshire primary and caucuses. I think those are going to be certainly important, though. But a lot of people think that that maybe some bigger states and states with a lot more votes included in them, including Illinois, could really help Barack Obama. And even if he doesn't do well in those early tests, he could still move forward with his candidacy and could really give him a boost very early on in the process.
Sean, earlier in the week there had been speculation about whether or not Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich would in fact attend the event here in Springfield today. Blagojevich, as you well know, and as many of our listeners may well know, has been chided considerably about the amount of time, or perhaps a better way to say it, a lack of time, that he as governor has spent in the Illinois capital city. But the governor is here saying, I understand, that he supports any effort that will be made in the legislature to change the date of the Illinois primary. Now, Sean, if that happens, what does it do for Illinois?
Well, I think it does a couple of things. It makes it certainly more of a player on the national scene. I still am a little bit, I think depending upon what the polls show, if they show that Hillary Clinton, for example, who has Illinois ties, she grew up in the Chicago suburbs, if she is able to make it a close race here in Illinois, you will see her a lot. You will see Barack Obama possibly here a lot. If the polls show Barack Obama is running away with Illinois, I doubt we'll see any of the major Democratic candidates spend much time here. I think they'll focus their attention elsewhere. It could actually wind up helping the Republican Party in Illinois a little bit more, though, making it more of a national player, I think, in picking that party's nominee for president. Certainly nobody appears on the Republican ticket appears to have any type of edge in Illinois at this point. So very interesting how it could play out, and I think Republicans in this state might find it just as helpful to them as Democrats would in Barack Obama's campaign. I think when you mentioned the governor, by the way, the governor is here, but from what I've been told is not going to be speaking to the press today. That I don't think you can fault the governor for. I think that's one of those situations, probably a no-win situation for him if he was to give a speech or give a lot of media coverage to himself. I think there would be people who would question if he was trying to steal some of that coverage from Barack Obama on his day. So the governor here, he issues a press release, and that may be all we hear from him.
Well, the AP is reporting the governor says he wants the legislature to send him a bill that would change the date of the primary. As it now stands, the 2008 primary in Illinois would be on March 18th, and apparently there is legislation being contemplated, being drafted. I don't know if it's been introduced yet or not, but to change that date to February 5th of 2008, which would make it considerably earlier than all the others, including New Hampshire.
Yeah, and that has been discussed as to whether or not it would be the first, or whether it would possibly fall behind and be very early February behind maybe New Hampshire and Iowa. How they will actually work it. It's also likely that Illinois wouldn't be the only primary on that day. There are other states, several of them, that are also looking to move up. People who are cynics, I think, about how politics are run and campaigns are run anymore would say that creating a bit longer of a political process probably is not a good thing as far as the amount of money that's needed to run for these races, the amount of coverage that in many times is just completely overblown as far as starting so early. I mean, here we are really nearly 2 years away from the general election, just a little bit under that, and we're already standing out in the cold to wait for people to announce that they're going to run. So,
and keying on the symbolism again, I see Senator Obama and his family have now disappeared inside the historic old state capitol, probably to take a look at those chambers, the House of Representatives chambers, where Lincoln made that famous House Divided speech so long, long ago. And so now Obama continues what's going to be a long weekend, as we've already said, of rallies and events to take him from here in Springfield to Iowa, to Chicago, to New Hampshire on Monday. And so that completes our live coverage of Barack Obama's declaration for the presidency from the square in downtown Springfield, from the old state capitol historic site. This broadcast has been produced through the facilities of public radio station WUIS in Springfield. Technical assistance and engineering provided by Greg Manfroy. For Sean Crawford, I'm Rich Bradley. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.